Broadcasting from the ESPN Radio Studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network, you're locked in with the Scuttlebucks, Jeff Cameron, and Tom Lang. Tampa Bay Buccaneer Talk starts now. Here's ESPN Tallahassee's Jeff Cameron.
Welcome in to the Scuttlebucks. Great to be with you. Voice guy, I told you, Jeff Cameron, alongside our dear friend and fellow Buck sufferer, Tom Lang.
Life is suffering, isn't it? Somebody said that once upon a time.
Yes, indeed. Frustrating is what it is right now. Very, very frustrating because Mike Smith's gang on that side of the ball really, really letting down the Tampa Bay Buccaneers yet again. And the Bucs got more offense than I think we thought we'd get on the road with a quarterback injured. He ends up playing amongst the best of all the players that participated in pro football on Sunday at that level. He was exceptional. And in addition to that, you know, you're able to get really good distribution of the football, and you see the emergence again of O.J. Howard as he's coming along now, and just good decision-making, a lot of important things taking place on the offensive side of the ball, including a late go-ahead drive on the road. And it's all for naught because the defense turns right around a few plays later and gives it up.
Yeah, the thing that sucks really in particular about this game is I thought Jameis was average to above average in the first half and then brilliant. I mean, that second half was woo.
Yeah.
That's the thing where, you know, if you follow his whole career, you go, I know that's in him. And then there it is. Big moment, big throw. But this was going to be a great team win for a lot of reasons.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the plays to me that I would have cited right out the gate, I guess I'm doing so anyway, is the third and long conversion to Cameron Brate over the middle before they score the go-ahead touchdown.
The timing.
Between the timing and the fact that DeSean Jackson gets away with murder because he's clearing out that, like, it's a screen pass behind him. That's a selfless play by a guy who was involved in the offense with a lot of shorter passes this weekend. You know, he was up there with O.J. Howard until O.J. scored his second touchdown for receptions and yards, and I think Mike Evans eventually takes the lead there. But there's great distribution across the board, and everybody's involved on offense. It's a day that you're not really running the ball successfully, but you still find a way to win, and you heard it during the broadcast. The Bills were a team that didn't give up more than 20 points in any game this year, and you score 27 in their house when you have to have it. That's what we should be talking about today. But well, it's not what we're talking about today.
Well, we continue to do this, right? There are a lot of highlights. You're right. There were things, a team element on offense in particular, because you're looking at a great, you're right. Jameis was brilliant in the second half. I thought he was good in the first half. He was brilliant in the second half. We should be talking about the records. I mean, here's a guy that's now going to shatter Dan Marino's record for most touchdowns before his 24th birthday. This is a guy who, when you compare his numbers to the all-time greats like Peyton Manning, for example, right now he's ahead of the curve. He's ahead of where he was. I mean, there are things about what he's even doing this year, which is a 2-4 campaign that isn't great, but when you compare and contrast to other guys that you look at and say he is or was a franchise quarterback, he's ahead of the curve, and yet the wins aren't there right now at 2-4. You know, last year was 9-7, and you just missed the playoffs, and this was going to be that next step. And some of the numbers are there saying that the next step is being taken by a player, an important player at the most important position, and it doesn't matter right now because you can't stop anybody. And the it's not to say he can't have bad games. He does. But, damn it, you're doing enough on that side of the ball. And I think they're about to take off on that side of the ball because they've gone against a bunch of really good run defenses. So they're going to run the ball better moving forward.
Maybe not this week.
Maybe not against Carolina. But they're going to run the ball better on the whole when they're not facing, you know, five of the top 10 run defenses
right.
in succession.
Yeah.
So they're going to run the ball better. You see the emergence of Howard. Jameis kind of got on the same page with D-Jack finally, and you saw the deep ball, even though it was called back, but a lot of underneath stuff to him, too. They're using him in better ways now. He's always had it with Evans.
Yeah.
Brate is consistently good. You know, Martin is back full in the swing now. Didn't run the ball all that well in this game, but you would think, again, because they had a good run defense, that's going to change.
Well, yeah, and again, if you look at the bad run defenses the Bucs have faced, they've been able to produce upwards of 4.5 yards per carry. You know, I look back at that box score with the Patriots, and I see you average about 4.8. It's like, wow. And you had that drive before halftime with Martin. May wanted to go back to that well. But hey, I digress. You know, I think it's 5 of the top 12 now that as it shakes out. Minnesota, obviously, a really good run defense. Arizona, they gave up a ton of points, but you don't really run on them. That's not how you get to, you know, massive yardage and point totals against Arizona. You do by throwing the ball down the field. The Bucs didn't really try in either trench in that game. Chicago, pretty good run defense. We talk about they fly to the ball. They hit hard. I mean, hell, two defensive touchdowns this past weekend against the very same Carolina Panthers we'll be playing this weekend. That was enough. And that's really embarrassing if you're Carolina. And then, obviously, Buffalo and Carolina itself this weekend. So, yeah, to me, when you look at the numbers, and I think Bassinger for the Times put it out, he had 49 yards rushing this weekend, did Doug Martin, but 50 after first contact. I mean, they had people all over him all day long. And to me, again, with that being the case and being able to throw for 380 when you're one-dimensional as an offense and to go up and score 27 points.
So much wasted.
You know, I think if social media were the way now, were the way then as it is now, with Peyton Manning's beginning to his career, I think people would be talking about him the way they're talking about Andrew Luck, where they'd say, really good quarterback, but I don't know, man. The verdict's out on him being in the conversation with one of the best. It wasn't until Peyton's mid-20s that he really took off. So I'm the same guy that a couple weeks ago said, you know, Jameis has to be more consistent. But when he goes and gets you a win on the road that you can't hold up for him.
So aggravating.
I mean, what the hell do you want the kid to do more than what he did this weekend?
I hope. I don't know. I'm not down in Tampa, and we're busy as we are up here doing the Jeff Cameron Show and covering this Florida State football team and college football in general, and then also doing the Scuttlebox and covering the NFL. And it's the best job in the world. Don't get me wrong. I'm not lamenting that. But not being down there, I'm not immersed with what the complaints are. I would think right now, 90%+ of the complaints should be both about coaching and the defense. I mean, I don't know what – I mean, it looks like they found a kicker. I don't really know what else you'd be complaining about right now. You know, prior to this week, I had a real – I going back to last year, I've had some issues with Dirk Cutter. Give him credit, called a good game on Sunday, so I'm going to leave that alone for now. Now's not the time. But, I mean, this is clearly a case to be looked at with the defense. This is unacceptable.
Yeah. No, well, that's – I was in the aftermath, I was trying to, you know, go through my own cool down period. You know how the players have a cool down period.
It's a wise move.
Where they get the post game talk from coach. And, you know, one thing I learned when I was up there in Minnesota, it's a little bit different than it is here in Tallahassee. And maybe they'll change it here after Jimbo's interaction with a fan and people being able to cover that. But they don't allow writers on the field after the game. So in Minnesota, I was hoping, you know, since
get
down the field, I could see the jersey exchange between, you know, Winston and either Cook and end up being Xavier Rhodes in that game, and then go in, let them do their cool off and get interviews. It's not the way they do it. So it's truly the video media gets out there, the broadcast media gets out there, but the guys who are covering the beat, they go straight to the locker room and they wait outside the locker room until the cool off period is over. I went through my own cool off period, and now reason is rushing back through my blood, you know, instead of
gathered yourself,
son of a,
instead of being angry.
Well, I was thinking it might not be crazy to make a change at that particular spot this week. I mean, after what they did in Arizona.
Well, and NFL teams do it. College teams don't do
it.
NFL teams will straight up fire people in season and make moves. It's not unheard of. So you're
right. You give up 4:30 and they had 26 minutes of possession to the Buffalo Bills? I mean, come on, man.
And you know, you've got good players. I mean, you really do. Now, you're weak in some areas. You can't get anybody off the edge to get pressure on the quarterback, and that's not going to change. And we said before the season began that that was going to be a big problem, and it is a big problem. But you're good on the interior. You've got incredible – I mean, you got a deep and talented linebacking core. Grant you, they haven't all been out there at the same time for most of this year. But when they are – they're really good, and even hampered by injury, they're really good oftentimes. And you know, you're marginal at corner at best because Brent Grimes is pretty good, and then other than that, you're pretty average. But in that secondary, besides that, though, I mean, you've got – the point is they shouldn't be this on defense.
They shouldn't be the team that's going to give up the most yards per game if they keep on this pace.
No.
In franchise history, we've had some real stinkers of defense.
Well, and I'm old, Tom, so I can tell you at 46 years of age, my first years of going to see the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were in the late 70s. So I'm watching that before they have the little mini run of greatness in 78, 79. But you go through the 80s and early 90s, and this, I mean, come on now. We saw some teams that were as bad as football can be played.
Sometimes confidence levels and instincts are completely irrational. Fans who take things to the nth degree. Oh, we're never good. Oh, we never do this. You know, or we always do this.
Right.
And they're always on the negative or the positive side. And you're like, hey, man, that's not true. Look at the numbers here. It actually is better than you think.
This time around, you can say, this is the worst I've ever seen. And statistically speaking, you'd be correct.
Well, this is where I'd say, if it's third and long and the ball is snapped, my impression is that it's not. We're not getting off the field.
No.
And I'm right.
And this is where, and I want to hear the number because I know you got it. What I'm going to say is this, though, is this was the area, admittedly, all Bucks fans, those of you listening to this podcast, and certainly we did it the first week we were on here, you know, there was an area where I said brace yourself basically for frustration because nobody can stand it. It's the most, one of the most heartbreaking things in the world. It's akin to your closer blowing a baseball game that you've led the whole way and over and over and over again. When you get people third and 10, third and 12, behind the chains by that degree, and you're an NFL defense, you think, okay, we're in good shape. This is when turnovers are forced. This is when people press. Punts forthcoming. We're going to get the ball back. I don't think that way, and that can't happen.
Well, it's like, yeah, it's like watching a basketball game, right? And there are a lot of basketball, I mean, cross-sport fans here listening to this podcast, and a guy lets a ball go, and it goes in the hoop. Second time, you're like, oh, this guy's not going to make this three, and then he makes it on you again. And every time after that, you think, well, they're just making every three.
He's going to make everything.
Right, and sometimes it's irrational, and sometimes there are those nights, too, when you go, oh, well, okay. So every time we play somebody who's in a slump, this freaking guy's going to come out of his slump and hit six out of his 10 threes. Well, thanks for playing. This is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's over 49% that opposing offenses are accomplishing third down conversions on the Bucks. So it's a coin flip. So if you said it's worse than a coin flip, you're not that far off.
I thought it was worse, but not by much. I didn't think it was 60%. So to know that I wasn't too far away,
it's a coin flip,
is heartbreaking.
Every time there's a snap on third down, it's a coin flip. Doesn't matter.
But
third and six, third and 10.
That's the more damning part because
we'll
you can break it down
out of first and second down.
Oh, yeah. And you're left wondering, how do you do that? I understand situational football. I got you.
Here's third and six, third and seven. I don't feel good on third and six and third and seven.
Because you're not going to get to the quarterback. So you're not going to get to the quarterback. NFL receivers, college receivers,
right,
they're going to get open.
Right. Yeah, okay. How about this? What's the over-under yardage to gain on third down where you say, all right, I think we're going to be okay? I'll bet you it's in the upper teens.
Well, I don't know. No, I typically feel pretty good third and 10. Plus, but
I don't. But third and 10? No, seriously, I'm not kidding you.
I'm not saying it's impossible. I probably feel better than I don't. At third and 5 or less, I'm just assuming first down. Third and 10 to 15, I usually feel pretty good.
You know what? This is for this franchise, too. And you and I go way further back than I do. But we both remember the good days. I mean, the real good days. Mm-hmm. Third down was the fun down. Because third down was,
you can let it fly, baby.
I know what you have to do.
Yeah.
I know who we have coming at you. There's a chance we could score on this play. I mean, if you were going to be irrational, that's what the irrational you would say.
By the way, dominant defenses do think that way. Dominant defenses know that's when you watch Alabama play on Saturdays. You know, go back and look at last year's stats on third and 6+ against Alabama. I mean, that defense is scoring touchdowns. I don't care anything about Alabama, people. Don't think I'm being biased about anybody here. I don't care. But I'm just talking about a dominant defense year in and year out. Go back and watch them. They wreak havoc because, yes, they know exactly what's coming. And most NFL teams do, too. And the fact that you cannot – you never feel good about it as opposed to embracing the, hey, could get a strip sack here, could get a tip pass here, could get a pick six here. I never think that way ever about the Bucks.
Yeah.
Ever.
No. When there's a turnover, you're stunned. I mean, like, when we get the turnover –
Vontae David, bravo.
That's why it's another thing for a team win. It's like you have a rough day again, but you get the big turnover and you turn it into 6 quick points.
Oh, it changed. In that moment, I thought, this looks like an NFL football team that's going and taking what they have to have on the road. Players forcing the issue. Great throws, great catch, toughness in the moment, forcing a turnover, converting said turnover. Mm-hmm. All the things you got to do to
third
go win.
Third and long to elongate the drive.
I mean, all these things you got to do to get it done.
For me, at third and 14, to me, is about the cutoff. Third and 14 feels like Roberto Aguayo on the kick, 41 yards.
You're like,
all right, okay, this is all right.
41, man.
Right. But, like, for example, Buffalo had, like, a third and 20 or third and 25. I thought, oh, well, no-brainer. And in the moment, as I'm watching the game, I go, wow, isn't that nice to have a third down and we're getting the ball back? I know we're getting the ball back.
Is this when he scampered for however many?
Well, no, not that one where they converted.
I was going to say, because in man coverage, oftentimes I'm worried with a mobile quarterback.
Well, and you have two situationals, you blow again. You got the ball on your own nine late in that half. There is no business. The Winston throw was a dumbass throw. Sorry, it was. Yeah. It was a pick that you can't have in that situation. And you're lucky that Buffalo doesn't understand time management, or else you're actually down three more points at the break. However, to me, you're on your own nine. Buffalo has one timeout left.
Why are you calling it?
Why are you trying to score on that possession?
Why are you trying to do it? Right.
Aren't you Mr. Percentages?
It's not a wise decision.
And then the other one is, I get it. You think your defense is going to stop him. I get it in that sense. But you call a timeout on first down. There's 2:10 or whatever there is to play, two whatever. Second down, you stop them, you call another timeout, and then third down is a two-minute warning. Then you have a timeout to play with and about 8 to 10 seconds more than you end up having. It ends up Buffalo converts that third down, which, of course, the moment it lingers for that extra half second, you know, the guy bounces and he misses one, makes one guy miss.
And then you go, no.
Even if contact is first issued by the Bucs defense about a yard short, you know he's falling forward for that first down.
Well, first of all, it looked like they were stuck in molasses.
Yes.
I mean, they're just staring at him, and he's staring at them, and he's like, oh, you're not going to tackle me?
Unfortunately for Quan, he looked like that all day. He's not right.
He's not right.
He might be hurting you more.
Well, and it's frustrating because you know what a good player he is.
And
the Bucs don't have that right now, and they desperately need it because they can't get off the field, as we've been describing for the entirety of the opening segment of the Scuttlebucks. All right, more disappointment in a moment on the Scuttlebucks.
Ain't nobody gonna steal my brand new guru.
Avast ye Scuttlebucks.
Scuttlebucks continues, and we do so with our friend Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com. Of course, you already know that, but always good to remind you, he joins us every week on the program. Lee, how are you, good sir, aside from covering this 2-4 squad?
Well, Jeff, I'm trying to think of happy thoughts. For example, I was trying to pass the time today thinking of the glory days of the Bucks defense when you count on Gaines Adams getting 6 sacks a year.
Glory days indeed, right? Yeah, man, it's a little frustrating right now. The Bucks had the game won, and then they didn't, and then they didn't. And then just like that, you saw Tyrod Taylor. Yes, Tyrod Taylor just down the field, touchdown, and then you get the unfortunate Humphreys fumble, and the best player arguably in the NFL on Sunday was Jameis Winston. And guess what? It didn't matter. The Bucs found a way to lose again, and it would have been a huge win for more than verifying the performance, but because the Bucs would have climbed back to 3-3, and I think we all can admit we'd be feeling very different about each this team right now if that's where they sat, but they don't. They're 2-4, and they're in desperation mode.
Oh, absolutely. And I got a little inside baseball story here for you. You could relate, and I'm sure Tom could relate. The last couple weeks I've been talking on and off with Adam Humphreys. Really, really good dude. Tom talked to him when he was up at Minnesota for the Vikings game. Adam Humphreys is just a great guy. And he's been getting better and better every year. It's a cool story, you know, undrafted free agent. And his dad is a regular reader of JoeBucksFan.com. And being that, I assume he's a regular listener of the Scuttlebucks. And if he's not, there's something wrong here.
Right.
At any rate, so I told Adam last week, hey, I'll do a feature story on you. Adam always tells me, hey, my dad reads you all the time. So, okay, that's cool. And I told him, I said, hey, I'm going to do a feature story on you. I'll make you look good. Tip your dad off. It's going to come in next day or two. Oh, okay. Well, I was going to run it Saturday, and I thought, you know what? Not too many people go to the website on Saturdays. That's just the way the internet is. I'll wait till Monday. And then when he fumbles the ball, I got sick to my stomach. Well, I better push the story back another week or two.
Yeah, let him have. He'll have a good game somewhere down the line. Could be this week. We'll see. But he'll have another one at some point, and you can run it then. A little bit better feel-good moment there for a feel-good story, I agree. And ordinarily, I think about Humphreys as a guy that you can depend on. And that was highly irregular and very frustrating and kind of part and parcel of the season the Bucks are having. mean, there have been some things go wrong in critical moments, and sometimes it's by guys you expect to screw up, and other times not so much. What I really hated about this was they remedied a lot of things in the passing game, and they did some things that you thought, okay, all right, now here we go. And then, it's all for naught, which is very aggravating.
Well, you hit the nail on the head in two respects there. You know, number one, the Humphreys fumble. I thought that was a very safe play because he's decent at getting yak. It was a safe play. He was going to get about 8 to 12 yards. Looks like they're going to march for a field goal. Oh, by the way, they got a field goal kicker now. So mm-hmm. It looks like they're going to set up for a game-winning field goal and then kapoof. But you hit the nail on the head with the offense. The offense was much more varied than what we've seen to date. It really was. They weren't relying on the bombs of Deshaun Jackson every series. It was some short passes. It was getting it to O.J. Howard. It was distributing the ball to many places. I don't think I'm off base saying that is the best the offense looked all year. And it has been a decent to good offense. And Buffalo was just okay. If there was a game that you won, if there was a turning point in the season, that was it. And then kaboom, it just fell apart. And as far as the defense, only thing you need to know, you sort of touched upon it already. Tyrod Taylor, 3 plays, 75 yards. 3 plays! Ah, and that just sums up the defense right then and there. In that three-play series, 75 yards, touchdown, tie ball game.
What did, at this point, the frustrations, you have to hope that the Bucs still see enough of the positive after this game, because people have been 2-4 and found a way to fight back and be there in the playoff mix. And I do think the Bucs discovered things on offense. Jameis looked like the all-world player that he can be, and they were able to find Deshaun in the right moments, in the right way, not just deep but also underneath, and then they did find him deep. I don't care that play was called back. They went on to score on that drive anyhow, but it was nice that the deep ball was there on that play. It was a perfect throw and catch. You had a lot of good things here, distribution, and it didn't look like Dirk Cutter was calling the game. It looked like some magic man who knows how to call games swept in there and did so. So I felt good about everything I saw, other than the fact that they lost. But what are they saying on the defensive side of the ball? They had to feel like tremendous failures.
Oh, and they are, and they're saying, hey, it's on us. Now, granted, T.J. Ward popped off after the game. Flaggy Baker did too, as expected on social media. He wasn't talking today. One of the rare times he was available in the locker room during the media availability, and he wouldn't talk. But Ward did talk, and he basically apologized. Like, hey, I wear my emotions on my sleeve. For people who don't know or are unaware, Ward popped off after the game, basically going after Mike Smith, the Bucs defensive coordinator, saying, I should be getting more snaps. This is crazy. I didn't come here to be a part-time player. He apologized. He said, hey, I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I want to win. I should have kept that to myself. I was out of line. And when I first heard Ward saying that, like, oh, boy, here we go. Oddly enough, I don't know if you read the story. I typed on Sunday afternoon right after the game. I said, Dirk Cutter better be careful because there might be an insurrection in this locker room. Little did I know, as I was literally typing that up, T.J. Ward was going off in the locker room. And I didn't know that because I was filing from the Tampa Bay area. I didn't go to the game. I was on the road. So, oddly enough, as I was typing that story, T.J. Ward was stopping off. But I don't have a huge problem with what T.J. Ward said because, a free agent can come in here and just go through the motions and collect his paycheck and be happy. He was obviously disturbed. He obviously cares. He wants to win. And I sort of felt for him, like, wait a minute, I'm a Super Bowl winner. I'm a former Pro Bowl player. I'm on the sidelines, and these stiffs are giving up 75 yards in 3 plays. Like, we couldn't do any worse with me on the field. I sort of respect that because that shows he's got a heart, shows he cares, shows he has a little passion. I don't have a huge problem with that. Flaggy Baker's a different story. He's a mouse again. He's a clown. Let's be honest. He's just a freaking clown. So there is some frustration. Mike Smith said, hey, Buck stops me. Mike Smith refused to throw any player under the bus. He goes, it stops me. It's my responsibility. And to Mike Smith's credit, he has yet to stand on the field and yell at a fan to come down and say, that's my face. He hasn't gotten to that point yet.
Nicely
done. Hasn't gotten to that point yet.
We'll get there soon enough if this continues.
Today, of course, obviously, for your radio audience, we're taping this on a Wednesday, and Noah Spence goes on injured reserve, and his season's pretty much done. There's a chance he can come back for the final 2 games, but that's iffy at best. And that just shows, the Bucs banked on 2 guys that were coming off injuries to be their stalwarts defensive end. One guy's not on the team, the other is on injury reserve.
And as far as contributions this year, he really hadn't provided anything anyhow. And this is a cold-blooded way to look at it, but the Bucks don't really lose anything in losing him because he wasn't doing anything. And that could very well be because he was fighting injury. I'm not trying to dismiss effort or anything like that, but as far as contributions and, you know, impacts in the game, he wasn't all that impactful. So moving forward, what's going to get better with this defense? Because I think that's where we're at now. I think a lot of people kind of exhale a little bit and believe this offense is about to hit its stride. It wasn't just that, you know, that they were able to kind of distribute the football evenly and produce the numbers and the yardage, but also O.J. Howard continues to emerge. All these things that you believe are positive signs. Defensively now is where we're hyper-focusing. What's going to get better?
Well, I think desperate times call for desperate measures. Now, the Bucs have toyed with a 34 defense. Now, today, Mike Smith all but shot down. They're not going to a 34 defense because they don't think they would get the most out of Gerald McCoy, who they, you know, Mike Smith says is their best defensive player, and by going to a 34 defense, they're sort of neutering him. Okay, that makes sense on face value. I get it. But you know what? Wade Phillips went to the Rams. Aaron Donald is by far the best defensive tackle in a 43 front. Wade Phillips installs a 34 defense, and look what they're doing.
Yeah.
Now, Wade Phillips can do that with a guy like Aaron Donald and still get production from Aaron Donald. Maybe Mike Smith could do the same with Gerald McCoy. And, oh, by the way, when Gerald McCoy lines up wide in his stance, he's devastating. The Seattle game springs to mind, where he lined up way wide on his split, and he was killing the Seahawks, absolutely killing Russell Wilson. So I think with some ingenuity and some imagination, they wouldn't neuter with a 34 defense. And by the way, Dirk Cutter says this almost on a weekly basis. He wants to get his best 11 players on the field. Well, the Bucs are loaded at linebacker. You can't tell me getting four of those linebackers on the field at the same time is diluting your defense that much. I don't believe that. Now, maybe Mike Smith's just saying that. He doesn't want to come out and tip other teams off like, hey, we're going to play more 34. I understand that. But if I was Mike Smith and Dirk Cutter, I'd say, you know what? Well, we got to lose. We got a crap defense as it is. We can't get much worse. We could get better. Let's try it out.
They also brought in Darryl Tapp, a veteran. They made
more of a run stuffer than anything.
Yeah, and they did that, and they also ended up bringing in a new corner. Any thoughts on the additions there?
Well, you know, the corner, not so much. There, you know, Robert McClain is in concussion protocol. Who knows if he's going to play Sunday? Generally, you usually skip a game. If you're in concussion protocol, you generally skip a game.
Sure.
That's not known yet, but it's a good chance he won't play until New Orleans week from Sunday. But he's this corner they brought in. You know, what do you expect when you bring a guy in October?
Sure.
Hargraves might move back out to cornerback again. He was playing nickel corner, and he did pretty well.
Much better. We didn't have to sit there aghast at how wide open people were. Yes, he needs to stay where he was. Yes, I agree.
Or the phrase I like to use, it wasn't like a deer bouncing through an Illinois cornfield.
So, okay, nothing on the corner. The other is just for depth and run stuff. Well, actually, they're getting gashed in the run, so I can understand, I guess, the signing of Tapp there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, at some point, and Mike Smith all but said this, at some point they got to realize, no, we're not going to get any pressure. There's no magic tonic out there on the street. It is what it is, so we might as well just hope the corners play better and maybe drop some extra. And there's another thing. I go back and forth with this with a lot of writers and fans. Peyton Manning used to drive Belichick nuts. And then Belichick, you know, being Belichick, he's a smart guy. When he started dropping nine guys and only rushing two against Peyton Manning in definite passing downs, that drove Manning bananas. Why can't Mike Smith do that? I mean, if you're not going to get any rush, just admit it. Hey, we're not going to get any rush, and just flood the passing lane. You know, basically Mike Smith's got to get really, really creative. I think he's got some of the players to be creative. It's how much creative can he be or will he be or wants to be.
Well, the Bucs can tie their longest winning streak over the Carolina Panthers. They won both games a year ago. You feel pretty good about that or no?
Well, the way the offense is, you know, I was reminded of this Sunday. The way the offense racked up points and racked up yards and they still lost sort of reminds me of Don Coryell. Don Coryell had great offenses and his defenses were sieves. And basically, we have to outscore our defense.
Yeah,
that's where I look at it right now.
Well, it's aggravating because you're wasting opportunities as you watch the emergence of a very good offense, the number one ranked passing offense in the NFL, and a quarterback who is a franchise quarterback, and he's doing this without so much of a run game. I mean, these are all things that should make you happy, I guess, long term. But in the short term, you're losing football games, and it's a wasted season if you don't use this as a catalyst to get to the playoffs. You've got
absolutely,
that's the aggravating aspect. A lot of things are emerging that you wanted to see emerge, but your defense, which you thought you could depend on, is just ass sorry. And
look at the division. Look at the division.
Yeah.
The division is setting up for the Bucs to make a run.
I agree.
But they can't make a run because they have no defense.
Always appreciate it, Lee.
Hey, anytime, Jeff. Have a good one, sir.
All right, you too. Lee DeKipper, JoeBucsFan.com. We'll come back and wrap it up here momentarily on the Scuttlebucks.
Fire the cannons. Plant the daggers.
There's the dagger! There's the dagger!
The Scuttlebucks are back on JoeBucksFan.com. Here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
So what do you do to figure it out? You know, how fast can you get it turned around? Cutter talked about it this week. You got to win one game. You can't be thinking about what's happened up to this point. You got to win one game. And by the way, that's true. You know, you look at a team like the New Orleans Saints, started the year 0-2, fresh off a bad season a year ago. There was really no reason to believe that they were going to start winning football games. Drew Brees is great and has been for a long time, and that wasn't the problem a year ago when they were so bad. There were so many other elements of their team within the division here in the NFC South that, you know, you thought you could pencil them in last place and move on. Now they've won four straight. They're 4-2. They're going to be a problem, which is not good for us. But there is a case in point where a team was two games under 500 and not a lot going for them in the right direction. And they started to win football games. And they did that by what? Winning the next game, getting to 1-2.
Yeah, to me, you know, for all those who said on Monday or late Sunday that, well, you can kiss the playoffs goodbye, it's not over yet.
Oh, no.
It's not even close to over yet.
You win on Sunday. You're right there. I mean, it's not where you want to be, but you are right there with a chance to make a run.
If you're trying to count wins and get to 9, 10, or 11 for the end of the season, yes, you'll say this is way too overwhelming. But a winning streak's a winning streak. These do happen in the NFL.
Also, you can't count wins or losses in the NFL. I mean, I'm sorry, unless you're the Cleveland Browns, where you can safely pencil in at least 10 L's a year, you just can't do this.
Well, Tennessee tried to F that game away this weekend.
They should have lost.
Yeah. Oh, well, yes. What I would say, I mean, this team won 5 straight last year, did it not? You know, so
they were road warriors last year.
It is possible. Games, yeah. And if you look at, I mean, it's a week-to-week league. It's a bi-monthly to bi-monthly league. It's a month-to-month league. I mean, think about this. The NFC South was the toast of the NFL just a few short weeks ago, and now it looks very gettable. You know, that's why it's really frustrating. If the Bucs are at 3-3, you're saying, man, 10-6 might be enough to do it.
I think the way the league is developing and the problems they got in Atlanta right now, yeah, that might very well be. I think 10-6 probably would get you the division.
They've got major problems. They've got a problem with the offensive coordinator not on the same page with his offense. Matt Ryan looks shook. He doesn't look like he knows exactly where to go, how to be.
Good. Let that continue. They're unable to move the ball. They have the best wide receiver in the league, one of the best running backs in the league. Yeah, they got a quarterback who's in the top 7. So, it's something to behold, isn't it?
A few things say it all to me from that game on Sunday. I watched the entirety of it. You might say, why torture yourself? Well, you know, I had Julio Jones and it was a close game. So, it's halftime. Michelle Tafoya comes out. They're starting the third quarter and they ask her what the coaches say because she doesn't do the live coaches interviews at halftime. And she said that Dan Quinn told her, listen, we have too many explosive players not to get them the ball. So I'm fully confident that we're going to be featuring some of our players this half.
Ooh, that's a shot.
Exactly right. So I think the there might be some quote-unquote voluntary suggestions for Sark, maybe, you know, in the weeks to come. So I'd look for that offense and see how it goes. But, I mean, Julio's bullying of that touchdown catch, taking the ball away from Malcolm Butler and then chucking the ball into the sky with disgust for body language said it all to me as well, to pair that with Matt Ryan's long look on his face.
It's a miracle he doesn't speak out more. They don't get him the ball. He's 17th, I think, in the league. He's the best player at the position in the league, and they don't get him the football.
Right, exactly.
It's nuts.
Yeah, he had 99 receiving yards this weekend, and about 50 of them came when the game was already over.
Yeah, they don't get him the ball. When you watch the Falcons play, and we're going to move on because this is the Scuttlebucks, when you watch the Falcons play, you're struck often in the midst of watching them play. Where the hell is Julio Jones?
But the point is, you know, that's one team. Then you look at Carolina, this week's opponent, who you have to beat. They're right in front of you. Let's go get them.
Lose this game, and you can start the conversation about firings.
Yes.
I agree with that.
I agree. This is it right here. 2-5, you're not coming back from. But you're 2-4, haven't played a division game yet, and have Carolina and New Orleans right in front of you. I mean, damn it. That team last week, Carolina, after rebounding for a couple of weeks, and you thought, well, Cam is back.
Looked as bad as a team can look.
Oh, my God.
Well, they've taken turns looking either really, really good, got it all together, we're in all in deep trouble, and or, oh, my God, Carolina's terrible.
They
like,
can't.
You can't figure it out.
They can't run the football. Jinx, here they come this weekend. They rush for 200 yards. But they can't run the football, and Cam is more than uneven. He's been either great or terrible. Yeah, but he's been more terrible than great this year, and it's not close. And then New Orleans. Listen,
we're going to lose to New Orleans, Tom.
You think so?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I can see why you project losses from here on out based upon what we've seen the last couple of weeks.
No. This is a recipe for disaster. They're gonna give Drew Brees all day to throw the ball. Good night.
You know the funny thing, though?
We play well against them.
And that game plan against New England might just have to be the game plan. Everything in front of you,
whole
3-7.
Lot of bending, right?
Yep. Right.
But not breaking.
Yep. Right. Yep. You got to get that stop in the red zone. Save the stop and save for the red zone. Because that's when you need them.
By the way, if you guys don't know, the Scuttlebucks is presented by our friends at Fan Retreat. FanRetreat.com. It's a great Florida company, and FanRetreat.com is a one-stop shop where you can purchase event tickets as well as travel. You can use FanRetreat.com to buy Buccaneers tickets or Seminoles tickets or just to buy airline tickets, book a hotel room, doesn't matter, Florida. You guys want to go see Florida play on the road? It's like SeatGeek and Expedia combined into one great travel and tickets website. And low, low prices. Check FanRetreat.com if you don't believe me. Compare them to SeatGeek, StubHub. You'll find 95% of FanRetreat.com tickets are cheaper. FanRetreat is a local company with less overhead, so they pass those savings on to you. Check out FanRetreat.com.
More bells and whistles on the way for FanRetreat as well. I think that's really, really cool. They've been great to us, so in turn, if you like us, like them.
Yeah. Now, if you're traveling to see this team, the Gators, the Noles, the Canes, whoever it is you support, whatever it might be.
The Canes of Lake, good Lord.
I don't imagine Florida fans or Florida State fans are in a race to travel to watch their team play right now. If you're a Miami fan, for the first time in many years, you're ready to travel and see your team play. So good for you.
Ready to travel to your home stadium, which is about an hour away from campus.
Yeah. And travel out of state to watch a team that's undefeated, unlike the massive amount of losses coupled between Florida and Florida State at this point.
Massive. Massive indeed.
It's just
Saturdays and gaping, Sundays are pretty long in Tallahassee,
gaping,
Florida.
Gaping wounds.
Well, gaping, just, okay. Yeah,
just
yeah, yeah.
Wounds, just wounds, wounds. Gaping wounds. Just brutal frustration. It's. But they. Here's the deal. You know, all jokes aside, if they fall to 2-5, you know, I'm not a guy, again, I reiterate this a lot just because we get new listeners all the time. The Scuttlebucks is growing in popularity, and if you like it, tell your friends and all that good stuff. But here's the deal. Like, I know when I listen to a new talk show host or I read an angle from a columnist that maybe I haven't read before, I think, well, I don't know what this guy's deal is. I don't know his background. I don't know what region of the country he's from. I don't know where he went to school. I don't know what he likes, dislikes. It all informs the way you read an article over time when you know a guy's pet peeves and a guy's strengths and weaknesses and a guy's regionality and all that. I'm not beat your arm on the desk, hand on the desk guy about firing people quickly. You know, I don't think it's a wise move for franchises in general to get rid of coaches 1-2 years into their tenure. You end up in perpetual motion the wrong way with constantly turnover at the most important position. And you in turn look like a clown. You look like Cleveland. You look like these teams that are forever making changes. I think you can weather the storm and go through tough seasons and still believe in your coach and make personnel decisions accordingly and move forward. But I will say in this case, I'm not that way. I'm not that way. I'm telling you now, if we get to 2-5 and this thing starts to go off the tracks with the talent this team has,
yeah,
then you're going to have to fire some coaches. And I don't necessarily mean by week 6 or 7 or 8 or whatever it might be. I'm saying just by season's end, you got a clean house.
Well, you've got an opportunity here, and you're wasting the opportunity.
You're wasting it, yeah.
And you got all indications of a culture problem, too. You've heard about practice problems, about effort, lack of consistency. You hear whispers that maybe the nightlife down in Tampa, you know, is a good time, unlike Sundays. You hear about players treating the Arizona trip as a vacation and then laying an
egg
and not
trying. That was according to a player.
That's according to a player.
Yeah, that's not an opinion of somebody who just likes the team and wrote it on a message board. That's a player.
Well, I mean, and again, we said it last week, but after the Chicago win, it was either Kwan or Levante was lamenting that we didn't practice well the week before.
Yeah.
But you know what? Hey, it worked on game day.
It's not the first time people have heard that.
Right. And Dirk even said last week, he's like, well, I don't have any question in our process. It's about the results at this point. It's like, man, I get it. I get it. But that might be the wrong tact to take here. To me, when you have the right coach, it's like a grimy window getting a heaping helping of Windex. You know, it's like, oh, my God, look at this. Isn't this a beautiful view out this window?
Mm-hmm.
No longer am I staring at mold. So that's what it is. Like when Kyle Shanahan finally made his way to Atlanta, right? That offense, the way they featured Julio, the way all of their weapons look to be getting touches, everybody's happy. Sanu's happy. Hooper or Tony Gonzalez at the time is happy. Even both Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman, everybody is getting theirs. Then he leaves. Look at what they are now. I don't think that's just a Super Bowl hangover. I think
some of it might be, but
there's synergy problems there. And you're out of rhythm. Like a play caller, as Dirk is fond of saying, his job is to get people into a rhythm. And this weekend, he did. I think he called a really, really good game.
Without question.
He
and that's why you really haven't heard me say much about him today.
He butchered a couple of situationals.
He does that every week.
But I think he called largely a really good game. I'd like it not to be breaking news when he does, but he called a good game.
That's a better way of saying it, yes.
But when you're looking at culture issues, I mean, it's contagious. Losing can be contagious. Just as winning was, when we won 5 in a row last year, losing can be contagious. I mean, by what rights did that defense last season with the personnel it had, which is worse than this season's, by the way, to carry the team down the stretch to get it to 9-7? I mean, we were saying, Mike Smith, good Lord, smoke and mirrors special. Way to go, man. I'm glad we're locking you up in the offseason.
I really did, and I thought it was the right move. There were things in his career, even as a head coach in Atlanta, that I liked. So this is really shocking to see this team with this personnel. Yes, they have no pass rush, and that's not going to change, which is why I dread that New Orleans game. But that said, I really thought, okay, you're loaded at linebacker, as I was saying before. You got your interior is good on the defensive line. You got enough talent with Brent Grimes in the secondary. You can get by with this. It's just not happening.
Well, I think the funny part too is that Hargraves played okay in the slot. I mean, he wasn't dominant
in the slot, but yeah,
but he's playing and he'll play more snaps. Now, here's the thing: I don't know about this week. We'll see what kind of personnel Carolina wants to line up in. Maybe Carolina really wants to commit to a run and try to establish balance in its offense. But certainly you'll see it in New Orleans. I read the participation chart, and I believe the number was 56, but it was under 60% of the snaps that Hargraves played. Well, in the coming weeks, you're going to be facing a lot of three-wide sets. We'll see just how good he is in the slot, but at least he's playing with confidence. You know, 28, I don't care if you're lying to yourself. It's better than being sheepish out there. It's better than looking lost, sick to your stomach on the field.
Well, let me ask you this, because when you go inside the numbers, and you and I always, in preparation for doing this podcast, also go back. We have the subscription to NFL.com and do the All-22's condensed game. We'll watch that. There's some things that stand out here. First of which is that the Buccaneers did total 14 quarterback pressures. And so this has been kind of the story this year. They don't get sacks, but they occasionally get pressures, and sometimes in bunches, but they can't close the deal. And this past week, Tyrod, broke contain and did some things. He's going to do that.
Tackling was such you-know-what.
This is what we come back to, though. That's the other thing I was going to bring up. I'm like, the quarterback pressures were there. Vernon Hargraves moving to nickel corner. His best game in coverage in his career. I think that's safe to say.
Well, yeah, I think it was 4 targets, no catches if you go by the advanced.
And,
yeah.
And a lot of those were just poorly thrown balls and he got away with holding. But I don't care. Okay, good. Like we said.
Listen,
good.
Yeah.
Whatever gets you through the night.
That's his game, isn't it?
Levante David played at an elite level in this game. Robert Ayers had a decent game.
His sack was on Nick O'Leary, though. I mean, that's not a tackle.
I'm just saying, and it counts. I mean,
does.
That's the punishment that he had has to take when he's out there.
It should. But the protection calls for O'Leary to block Ayers one-on-one.
Yeah, that's not a good
idea.
You
tell me what the scouting says about the defensive ends when a play calls for Nick O'Leary to be blocking Robert Ayers one-on-one.
Well, because we covered Nick O'Leary, we know that's an impossible block for him to make. He can't block anybody who's reasonably sized in
Simeon
the NFL.
Rice, he's putting out workout tapes this week. He says, call me. Simeon Rice would be able to touch him.
No, he wouldn't be
That's
able to
get
in front
game.
Of him. No, he wouldn't be able to get in front of him. Anyhow, Gerald McCoy played well. He had three pressures on the quarterback from the interior. Brent Grimes had a bad game.
Yeah.
He got targeted and he got beat, and he's normally not the problem. I guess I bring all of that to say this. You got a lot of things there that if they could just close the deal, if those pressures could be sacks a couple of times, if you get Brent to have a good game at the same time Vernon's having a good game, well, sweet Jesus.
The big first half run of Quan makes the tackle. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah.
A lot of things. I guess I didn't want to say, as we do merriment and misery and sign off, that there wasn't anything. That's my merriment. Those were my stats merriment-wise. You know, again, some of that is Pro Football focused stuff, which you could take or leave given when you watch the actual games, the impacts of those statistics. And yes, but they are another means of measuring. Cue it up.
And now, merriment and misery.
For those that were just listening, I already said my merriment. Tom, what's yours?
Well, my merriment is that they were willing to move Hargraves to slot corner.
Oh, that is a reason to.
You know, and
some call it desperation, some call it great coaching.
Some may call it luck. Well, yeah. I'll call it luck, I guess.
I'll call it successful.
It looks like you got a kicker, but, you know, Folk has fooled us before.
Also, so. O.J. Howard, throw that merriment in there.
Yes. O.J. is playing with a little bit more presence. It's not mm-hmm. just that every touchdown he scores is going to be the wide-open touchdown play, which I like.
Also, Jameis to Jackson.
Yeah, yes. Jameis and Deshaun look to be good. See, you're finding reasons. That's the thing. We would be talking about a lot
Tap
of positives.
Tap dance and merriment over here, huh? Misery, another loss.
Yes, misery, another loss, and misery, three plays, 75 yards. I mean, are you situational football?
Kidding me with that nonsense.
The Humphreys thing is unlucky, but you know, the one thing I will say there, it's his first touch in forever, too. And that's the hard part.
Well, that's what's going to happen as you start to flood the offense with better players.
Right, right.
But he can't. I mean, I love him, so I mean, he's played well.
He does everything he's supposed to.
Yeah, that sucks he dropped that. It's kind of really important that you not fumble there.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, it is. So that's a little bit of misery in with the merriment. there's that. And
man.
With all of that, thanks to all of you who listen to this fine podcast, I'd like to do one here soon in which we're documenting a victory. Does it happen on Sunday for the Buccaneers?
Over under 2.5 sacks this weekend for the Buccaneers. And here's why I say that. When Cam goes bad, Cam goes mental.
Yeah.
So he'll find his way into a sack.
Yeah, he does. I'm going to go over.
Okay.
The Bucs are going to get a win.
The Bucs are what?
The Bucs are going to get a win.
What?
They're going to be 3-4 the next time we talk.
Oh, well,
and by the way, this from the guy on Scuttlebucks who predicted us to lose on the road to Minnesota, lose to Arizona, lose to – no, I picked us to beat Arizona. Lose to Buffalo. No,
no, you picked us to beat Arizona.
I had it yeah. So
this is a game we should go up there and kick their ass.
Yeah, I said should, but I worried about it. But you're right, yeah. Okay, so
I'm not calling you out. What I'm saying is we saw what they did.
No, you saw what the Rams
did to him last week.
All I'm saying is that I tend to go the other way. I'm waiting on this team to prove me wrong, and they should be able to. I'm picking them this week. Okay. I like them to win this game.
Yeah, I think they've got more mental fortitude right now than the Panthers do. However, this is just like the Louisville-Florida State game this past weekend in Tallahassee.
Somebody wants to give it away.
Both teams are reeling.
They want to give it away.
But
give them a reason.
Who's going to give it away more?
Give them a reason. Somebody's got to give them a reason to lay down.
Who's going to outsource the price
and
the cost?
Nicely done. Mm-hmm. Are you picking us or not?
Oh, sorry. You were waiting on me? I have to.
Right.
This season's not going
to
be.
It's
no, but it's not going to be in the crapper yet. They're not going 2-5.
Well, I think you're right. They're not. They're going to win this game. 3-4 are the Buccaneers. We'll talk to you next time on the Scuttlebucks. Good job, Tom Lang. And Lita Kemper.
Well,
and also, happy birthday to you, sir. That was my compliment.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
We'll talk to you next time.